everyone, welcome back to the Earth on Survival Guide, the podcast for all disciplines, paths, players, and game masters. With your questers, Josh and Dan, I am Dan.
I am Josh.
And on today's podcast, we will be discussing more things horrifical as we talk about two more of our favorite horrors in two different... we're going to actually delve into the Powerlanth campaign set, one, and back to the horrors book, two. So if you have any questions for us, please feel free to drop us a line at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to start with Bwalgathor.
This was alluded to in our previous horrors episode when we were talking about Nemesis, because Bwalgathor is a named horror that was introduced in the Powerlanth box set that we decided we were going to include in our series here, because of course we were. Bwalgathor is also known as the Horror Hunter because... So Nemesis uses other horrors as a way to tempt and corrupt adventurers and heroes. Bwalgathor just targets other horrors. It uses marked and corrupted name givers as a way to track them down, but it doesn't really have any interest in tormenting or marking or influencing regular name givers at all.
Yeah, it finds them unsatisfying prey.
Yes.
Bloat forms and despair thoughts are of particularly tasty morsels for Bwalgathor to hunt after. It really does love to catch horrors in the act of defiling and demeaning their prey. So the name givers. So it loves the juxtaposition of watching that horror go from perpetrator to victim. And that is really what Bwalgathor loves to feed on. And since bloat forms and despair thoughts are all about that, the superiority, yeah, that's what Bwalgathor really, really loves to feast.
Yeah. Bwalgathor is interesting because the way that he's presented in the Powerlanth book is that there's not much information about it outside of Powerlanth. There's not really a whole lot of actual information about it to begin with, but... Mm-hmm. It's not a horror that you would necessarily hear about in most other parts of Barsave. And yet, anybody who spends a little bit of time in Haven or Powerlanth in particular, because of how much Bwalgathor's influence has kind of become imprinted on the space, because when Powerlanth was hidden away in its pocket dimension, Bwalgathor had wonderful hunting grounds because, of course, the despair thoughts and bloat forms and other horrors that were trapped there didn't have any way of getting away from him.
Yes.
But name givers who spend time in Powerlanth, especially if they have heard about Bwalgathor from someone else there in the area, remember, and I put that with kind of scare quotes around it,
yep,
that they had been told stories, you know, when they were a child about this vicious horror Bwalgathor, whether by parents or grandparents or whatever, and that there's this sudden sense that they have known about it all along when there isn't really any reason necessarily for them to have done so.
Yeah, I just love the fact that it's like it seeps into the atmosphere from the rocks, from the ground, from the air, that the more you hang out there, the more you just happen to know about Bwalgathor, because he so permeated the landscape in Powerlanth.
And that sort of psychic residue is derived from the memories of other horrors in the area and the torments that have been inflicted upon them by the Horror Hunter, as he is sometimes known.
So when you see Bwalgathor, because he doesn't really have an interest in you as a party, he appears as a humanoid figure, usually the same race as the viewer. So I would love to introduce him to a party of characters and have everybody see the race that they're playing and make sure that they can role play that and not give away, not tip their hand to anybody else that they're with. He's always wearing a dark cloak that moves with life of its own, because this is really an appendage of ropey, fleshy tissue draped over his back. And that's not creepy at all. But he has seven blade-like arms, because he has, by the way, seven attacks in a combat round. So, yeah, not to be messed with. He has two little other, like, you know, non-sharp arms to work with. So 9 arms in total, but 7 that are blade-like and very sharp and can be used to fight. Yeah, so when he finds a character, a name giver who is marked, he will use his mark trace horror power and his detect horror power to follow that thread, that line, that laser beam from the marked name giver back to the horror's lair. It kind of like a fishing line. That's pretty much it. So all of the horrors we've talked about so far are unique, one of a kind, and that's why they're named. And Bualgathor is no different. So my appreciation goes to, this didn't make it into the horrors book, but made it into the Parlanth boxed set. So well done.
Yes. Well, because it is something that is unique to horrors, to Parlanth in a way. Now, it does mention that while it might seem a good thing for a horror-marked or tormented individual to have Bualgathor pick up on that mark and trace it back to destroy the horror that is tormenting them, it's not a pleasant process when Bualgathor uses its mark trace ability. First off, it needs to touch the person that is the source of the link, but the target also takes damage in the process equal to the result of the test. So it is a painful, difficult process that is reduced by mystic armor. Considering its mark trace is a step 19.
Oh, yeah. Have the healing potions.
Higher powered adepts are likely to be able to survive it, but most normal folks probably not. And then the detect horror power that Bualgathor has not only actually allows it to notice the presence of horrors, but also horror cursed items and horror marked characters. This is the way that it can determine whether somebody can act as the initial link for tracking back one of these foul beasties.
Yeah, I love the idea of introducing a horror that's not out to get you or your party, but can still ruin your day.
Yeah. It is a horror that is largely confined to Parlanth, or that's where its connections are most strongly held. There are 3 different options that are given in the Parlanth box set about what might be going on. One is that Bualgathor has long left Parlanth. It is no longer sort of hunting those grounds, but the centuries of hunting and torment that it was inflicting on horrors in there still inhabit the area, and it's actually enough to make horrors within the ruins perhaps pause before they mark someone on the off chance that Bualgathor might detect it and come tracking them, that it acts as kind of a little bit of a safety measure, perhaps, in those who venture into the ruins. Then there's the possibility that every so often Bualgathor will return to Parlanth because it has a fondness for its old hunting grounds, and it will eventually come back, and there might be sightings or visions or dreams of it as it comes back and maybe causes some trouble amongst the horror population there. And then there's, of course, also the option that Bualgathor continues to be in Parlanth, and while he is a very difficult opponent, since he doesn't have much interest in normal name givers except as a source of the link for him to track back, he can sort of show up as a deus ex machina in some regards to save the character's bacon or to eliminate an NPC that is otherwise causing problems that's got a connection with horrors in some way.
Yeah, I think Bualgathor was created with the line, the old adage, is the enemy my enemy my friend?
In this case, no.
It's still a horror.
Bualgathor has pretty similar stats to some of the other equivalently powered horrors that we've been talking about here recently. Attributes in the teens and low 20s. In this case, 7 physical attacks. You mentioned that earlier. That is brutal. If that gets focused on a single character, that is absolutely going to wreck somebody's day. In addition to that, it has 2 spellcasting actions, the equivalent of Circle 8 Nethermancer spells, Damage Shift, as well as Silent Walk, so it can sneak up on things, and of course Terror, because everything's better with Terror. Pretty high death rating, low 20s in terms of its defense ratings, high armor, high mystic armor, pretty fast movement for first edition stats, 100 yards per round combat movement, equivalent to these kind of upper tier horrors that we are getting into, which makes sense if it's an entity that is going to be hunting standard bloat forms and despair thoughts and the like. It needs to be able to ruin their day as easily as they would ruin a name giver's day.
Yeah. So I like Bualgathor. I think he's perfectly fit for Parlaenth. And I think he's also permeating the ruins there. And it's very well done.
He does get a reference in the Legends of Barsave campaign series. I think there's a reference that shows up in chapter 8. I think in the climax of the first half, there's a reference to Bualgathor and sort of an appearance, not an actual appearance, but he basically is, there is a reference there that is sort of tying in some ways to the overall story arc that is taking place.
Well done.
You got to bring him in. He's cool.
Oh, if you're in Parlaenth, why would you not?
Why wouldn't you? Yeah,
exactly. So that's a quick rundown, first 12 minutes or so for Bualgathor. The rest of the episode, we're going to talk about Druistad.
Not a lot of info on Bualgathor compared to some of the other horrors, so it's a little bit shorter than we have in the past. He's in some ways kind of straightforward, except for the different choice of prey and a couple of the special powers. But then we get into Druistad.
Yes. The Druistad is actually a Tiskrang word and is now the proper noun for the horror, because Druistad's true name is unknown, because speaking Druistad's true name gives it power over you, and that's all bad.
Yes. Its name is known to its victims, but it is not shared outside that.
Not so much.
Similar in that respect, in some ways, to our good friend Nevis. In terms of the name having power and influence.
Yes. So Druistad is the horror, another horror, that also roams the waterways and preys on travelers in a fair but false guise. It prefers groups of victims, not individuals, and it always eats the hearts of its victims. And it is relentless in tracking you down if you happen to physically escape. But once it's marked you, it will find you, and it will track you because it links its pattern to its marked victims. So it will find you. But what it also likes to do is turn the group against one another. And so it causes that confusion, that fear, that anguish. It also feeds the feed on that. But I love the fact that it always astrally and physically looks like a Tiskrang.
Yes. Druistad haunts primarily the Serpent River Basin and likes hunting along the Serpent River and in communities along its banks. Hence the reason that it has a Tiskrang name.
Mm-hmm.
It especially likes targeting Tiskrang covenants and riverboat groups because of the community that is there.
It's just, it likes a group performance. The essay is fantastic. The short story in the essay about how it showed up on this riverboat, got everybody singing the songs, but pulled its weight on the, and it was a female at this point, and was so comely that it made everybody just, you know, mouth agape at how attractive that Druistad was. And when it was singing the songs, all the revelry going on, it slipped in its true name and everybody sang it at least 3 times. And then it was over.
Yeah. The idea of speaking the name of a supernatural entity multiple times is something that shows up quite a bit in folklore and urban legend. Yeah. I mean, you've got Bloody Mary, a classic. You look in the mirror in the bathroom in the dark and you speak her name and she appears behind you. Candyman from the movie of the same name is another one. Beetlejuice,
kind of a
humorous twist on that. This is an idea that has shown up quite a bit.
Yep.
And so the deception here of Druistad, of this horror, able to mark its victims by getting them to speak its name and thereby them granting it power over them, is a nice little twist and nod to that classic folkloric idea.
Isn't there one in Lovecraft, like Hestur?
Yep.
That does that?
There is in the, I think it's in the Call of Cthulhu RPG, there is the idea that if you speak Haster's name, you have it run the risk of drawing its attention. And I don't know where this originally came from, but I know in the game store that I used to hang out with, there was a joke of like, I don't understand what the problem with this scroll is. All it says is just Haster over and over. And I think it might have originally come from like a D&D or Dragon magazine or something like that.
I was thinking at some point in the past. The exact same cartoon. It just says Haster. So, yeah.
To the point that like in the store, like, oh, would somebody have to go just Haster.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of idea. It's kind of silly a little bit when you apply it to Lovecraftian deities, because, well, as I've said in the past, they tend to be more forces of nature. The name of Haster would potentially be included in a spell or ritual where you were beseeching this cosmic force at the center of the universe to maybe grant you something. But merely saying his name would not be something really that I feel would draw his attention. But still, this horror plays off of that classic idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something that's even referred to, sort of alluded to in a sense, in the Harry Potter books, where be who must not be named.
Exactly.
Rather than say the name of
Voldemort,
the bad guy of Voldemort, you allude to him, you have other things. Another kind of slightly different take, if you look at the fairy tale of Rumpelstiltskin, this is kind of a reversal of that, where she has three tries to guess its name to thereby break its power over her. There's that kind of idea as well. So like three is a strongly mystical number in a lot of folklore and legend and numerology and stuff like that. And so this is kind of playing on all of those classic ideas. And then once the horror has power over its victims, it then manipulates their dreams and drives them mad or torments them through dreams, giving them nightmares to the point where perhaps individuals might throw themselves overboard in order to escape the torment or the fear that these dreams generate within them. Once things have gone so bad, then the horror reveals itself, transforming from its pleasant, illusory guise to reveal its true form, where it then rips people's hearts out and eats them.
Well, and in a game where names are important, this is one of the few horrors where the name is stupidly important.
Yeah. In a way that is not the case with Nebis. Nebis's name has power, but it is not so intrinsically tied in a way to the story or the method by which the horror operates.
Yeah. This one is.
Hence the very strong connection with the Tuskrang and the riverboat culture and the community that kind of is the communal Tuskrang society, where they tend to have much larger family groups and communities. A horror that targets that very aspect of things is kind of a special Tuskrang approach. While it will not exclusively target Tuskrang, it certainly appears to like them quite a bit in terms of prey, and will take pleasant Tuskrang guises in order to endear itself with crews in order to then wreak its bloody vengeance on them.
Yeah. And it's not just crews on the serpent. It'll actually pursue groups of people in the villages near the serpent, in lands very close to the serpent. So it'll go after, let's say, orc cavalry, but really, to Josh's point, it really does prefer the Tuskrang guys, and its astral form is primarily based on Tuskrang as well. So I think it finds that that's the easiest prey to get.
Yeah, in some respects, we can draw some similar parallels here to serial killers, for example, who tend to have a type that they prefer. As we are aware of them in sort of real world serial killers are a little bit different from the pop culture
TV show,
urban legend, popular media kind of aspects of them. But again, horrors are drawing quite frequently on that collective legend pool of that pop culture idea of that story as opposed to the reality. And so while the horror could target anything, it has a preferred prey. It has a method by which it prefers to operate. And part of that is something that not just with Druistat, but really with any horror, you could use as part of the story that you are constructing around a horror that you might be using in your game. If you are approaching your adventures or story arc involving a horror as kind of a mystery, where either the characters maybe initially need to find out what the horror is that's operating, and then maybe track it down, you can kind of look at crime media, particularly like serial killer type media. You look at shows like Criminal Minds, for example, Dexter, Hannibal, shows like that, or long story arcs in other police procedurals where they are dealing with a serial killer, and that you can have clues and tells and things like that that kind of give you things that you can research so that you could then perhaps go to the great library and do research and find like cross references. And these things indicate that we are dealing with this horror, and now maybe that gives us some knowledge that we can use against it, or to perhaps anticipate what it might be doing next.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps structuring your horror-based adventures as a kind of procedural where your player characters need to figure out what or who, in a sense, they are dealing with in order to put a stop to it. And that might not necessarily be suitable for every horror, but that is something you could certainly draw on as a possible template or source of ideas for things that you could do within an Earth Dawn game revolving around horrors.
Yeah. And I think Druistat is only slightly more difficult to introduce to a player character group if you don't have a Tuskrang player character, because it really does try to attract Tuskrang first. Under the Tuskrang guise, male or female, it'll be either one, but only slightly harder. Not insurmountably so.
Its powers enable it to appear however it wants. It just has a preference. Its horror mark works a little bit differently. In general, horror marks work however you want them to. But in Druistat's case, when a member of the group it is targeting has spoken its name three times, then it has the ability to mark everybody in that group. Again, that idea of speaking its name three times, granting it the power to affect you. Once they are all marked, it has the ability to track them almost flawlessly. So it's very difficult to escape from the horror, even if you manage to get away from its initial rampage. It is able to track you down. According to the stories, it can still hear your heartbeat miles and miles away, and that is how it finds you. Again, a very like kind of chilling horror story, serial killer kind of image and thought that's going on there.
Totally.
It's got the terror power. It loves using the terror power at the beginning of a fight because it likes to have its prey be demoralized and fearful. That's what it's kind of feasting on, is that fear that it inflicts as a result of what's going on. It's got Circle 8 illusionist spells. Again, that's part of how it can appear however it wants. It's got Karma Tap, which is a pretty scary power. And that allows it to potentially manipulate victims that might have escaped it that it has marked. It's got Damage Shift, because of course that's another fun horror power. Yeah. And then it's got Dream Shape, which we mentioned. It can use that to enter the dreams of any victim that it has marked, and then uses that power to torment victims by causing them to dream of themselves dying, often in ways that are similar to how Druistat will actually kill them by piercing their heart or devouring their heart or tearing them out. Yes. Druistat will appear somewhat masked within those dreams, perhaps as a giant avian type creature, a bird with a sharp beak, kind of resembling more its natural form with glowing red eyes.
Yeah. So I think there's a, in reading through the essay, there's a nice procedure to go through all of those powers for the game master to use. It presents itself to the group as an attractive Tuskrang or a member of the race, but preferably Tuskrang. It manipulates someone to say its name three times. Then it horror marks someone. Then it will use Karma Tap, Terror, and Damage Shift if there is a fight. And then if you get away, It'll do the tracking you by your heartbeat and then dream shape. However, it will retreat if it finds itself overwhelmed. It will live to fight another day. This is a horror that, you know, doesn't like to die then come back somewhere else. It wants to preserve itself. And so it will retreat if need be. It's just getting away from doggedly pursuing characters, players every once in a while.
Yeah, there's a another thing that you could have as a little bit of a twist on this is because Druistat does target groups, rather than perhaps killing them all at once, it might allow the group to carry on and then kind of pick individuals off one by one. Again, going much more along like a potential serial killer kind of approach. And that might be a way that player characters become aware of it operating, that they might know of a riverboat crew that they have traveled with before, or perhaps, a community that they have visited or something where individuals are running afoul of this thing that is apparently hunting them, and that's how they become aware of it and might need to become involved in an effort to defeat it, rather than perhaps becoming direct targets of the thing themselves.
These are two vastly different but really cool horrors to play around with. They're both kind of location-based. One is par length, one is mostly the Serpent River and its tributaries. One doesn't really deal with name givers, and one prefers groups of name givers. So, nice little juxtaposition on these two.
Yeah. Bualgathor is unique. Bualgathor is very interesting, and as a horror that was introduced a little bit later after the horror's book, is very clearly a sort of different and interesting take on things. Druistat, again, has this kind of shtick playing into this idea of the names being important and speaking it three times and targeting groups, having this method of how it goes about. It is not in some ways quite as flashy or dramatic or whatever as some other horrors, but it is still a rather difficult opponent, again.
And very effective.
Yeah. Attribute steps in the upper teens and low 20s. Doesn't have as many attacks as Bualgathor, but you're still looking at a couple of high-powered physical attacks, a couple of spell actions per round, high defense ratings, high death and unconsciousness ratings, reasonably fast movement, karma on top of that. We haven't been talking about...
Oh, no.
Horror karma being able to be an even greater influence over how much of a difficult opponent they can be. Kind of ran through its powers, and it's just an interesting one that doesn't lend itself so well to the infamy or the lasting impression that some of the other horrors in this book have. It's in some ways kind of an understated horror compared to what else is in this book.
Fair.
It's not really understated, but when you put it up against Nebis, against Ezerthgrath, against Chantrell's horror, against Giftbringer, Druistat feels in some respects a little bit low-key, a little bit understated.
Like a serial killer.
Yeah.
They blend in with everybody else. You just don't notice them.
So, again, another great example of taking inspiration from somewhere, putting that little twist on it, maybe bringing in some aspect of folklore or urban legend or fairy tale or something like that as a way that this thing operates, and perhaps establishing some rules of how it works so that your player characters have a fighting chance. While horrors, broadly speaking, can do anything, when you are creating your own horrors, you want to establish the rules and the methods that it operates by and ways that the player characters might be able to figure out weaknesses or some way of defeating it. Because ultimately, that's what Earthdawn is about. As a more hopeful kind of high fantasy heroic game, yes, it's got these elements of horror and dark fantasy, and there are certainly places where player characters are going to suffer and possibly die because they are going up against some of the most powerful entities that exist. There should be, for characters that do their research and are prepared and are cautious about how they approach this sort of thing, they should be able to come out on top eventually in some way. And what you might need to do as a game master is establish those rules, make sure that if they investigate, the player characters have a way of finding out those rules and playing fair by them, so that if they are doing their research and doing their preparation and being careful, they have a chance. But if they just go in half cocked, they're gonna get their behinds handed to them.
Rightfully so.
Again, I want to like call attention back to Monster of the Week. The game mastering section of Monster of the Week is phenomenal in laying out the defining terms of a monster and the rules that it operates by, and how you structure a mystery that operates around the idea of investigating a monster that is causing problems and how you might defeat it. And that is something that, broadly speaking, even if you're not using, say, the direct mechanics, but just broadly speaking, the themes and ideas and notions that it presents can be really helpful for designing an adventure or story arc around a horror, especially one that operates in methods similar to Druistat, where it is kind of serial killery and whatnot.
Fair. Any final thoughts on these two? Because we've only got a couple horrors left out of the main book.
We're getting to the end here. Only a couple more. Going back to it, I like Druistat. It's, compared to the others, understated. You've got your kaiju horror in Ubir. You've got Nemesis, which has this kind of massive network and this flashy thing. You've got Nebis, which is physically not maybe impressive, but has this other really cool stuff. You've got Artificer. You've got a bunch of like really flashy and standout entries in this book. Druistat is just as good as any of them.
Subtle.
It's just a bit more subtle in the entry compared to the others. But I think it's still a great horror to play with.
Oh, totally. So if you have any questions for us, please feel free to drop us a line at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, say my name three times for your legend.
And then say mine three times to protect yourself. Good night.